Perbeis, and this is Yechezkel's initiation into the prophetic mode. And we compared it last time, at the very end of the class, to the opening prophecy of Yirmiyahu and the opening prophecy of Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel, both in their initiation, have something that touches their mouth in order to make them a prophet. And if someone would just walk to you and say, from now on, you're a prophet, and you'd say,
I'm not worthy, I don't want it.
The greatest prophet of all time, the father of prophecy, we say, Moses, was 80 years old at the time of his first prophecy, right? So there's always the chance to meet your destiny, right? So if anyone who has approached with the possibility of prophecy may at first feel that I'm not worthy for it. Why me? Moses asked, right? The owner fled from the prophecy. There's one prophet who enthusiastically embraces the prophecy. It is Yeshayahu. Hashem comes to him, his first vision, and he says, whom should I send to deliver this message? And he raises his hand, send me, I'm ready to go. Right? So according to the Medrash found in the Yalkut Shimoni, that's why he was zocha to give such beautiful, positive messages, because he embraced the prophecy. Perhaps that he knew that there was time for such prophecies, so he embraced what was going to be a positive prophecy, as opposed to Yirmiyahu, who recognized that
his life will not be pleasant.
Yeshayahu's wasn't either. He talks about being beaten by the people because they don't want to hear his words. So there's a very big difference between, let's say, those who try to get people to be better and to live a better life, those who give Musar. We're usually paid by the people we're speaking to, right? So we have to be very careful what we say to them, right? You're a teacher in a school, the students are paying your tuition, right? You can't just beat them and tell them you're all evil and you're all about to change your ways. But the prophets weren't being paid by their audiences, so they could be fire and brimstone. I mean, I can point to you in every book 100 prophecies that you could never get away with saying today. You're suffering because of your own sins. You must be better, and you have to. You can't say these things today, right? So the difference is that they were speaking with a degree of certainty. They had just heard a prophecy from God, and they speak it over. Best I understand, no one is receiving prophetic messages today, right? How can you be so sure that you're saying the right thing? Right? But how sure we are? We're not speaking with a direct line from God. Be it as it may, Yeshayahu was so sure of his prophecy, he wanted it, he pursued it, and when he finally, for the first time, beheld God, he says he sees God on the throne, his reaction was, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos Malach Ha'aretz Kivado, a very famous line of the Kedusha. And immediately upon seeing that, he sized up the situation and says, Oili kinit mesi. Woe unto what I just saw. I am a man of impure lips, and I am in a nation of impure lips. I don't deserve to see this, and my people don't deserve to have one of them seeing this. That's what he said. Right? So the very next scene, an angel takes a coal, hot coal, in tongs, not even in the angel's hand, but it's in tongs, and he touches Yeshayahu's mouth, and he goes, now I have released you of your guilt. I have cleansed you of your iniquity. Now you're ready to be a prophet. The same three words that appear in this description, Vayaga al pi, touched my mouth, right, is used by Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu says, I'm not ready for this. I don't know how. I'm too young. I'm not sophisticated. I don't have good imagination. Whatever the perush is, what he means when he says, Lo yodati daber ki na'ar anochi, I can't speak because I'm just a lad. So Hashem says, don't say you're a lad. Don't say you're inadequate. I will make you adequate. I will turn you into something else. And it says, Vayaga alpi, he touched my mouth. God, not an angel, not with a coal, but directly God touched my mouth. This is all in his vision, in his dream. He touched my mouth, and he says, now I have put my word in your mouth, and now you're ready to be a prophet. So the homework I gave you was to decide why is it that Yeshayahu was told your guilt has departed from you Now that I have removed your sin, you can give prophecy. But Yirmiyahu was not told such a thing. And so two different answers appear in the commentaries. One specific, one general. Specifically, why does Hashem tell Yishayahu, I have now forgiven you of your iniquity? What iniquity? So, specific iniquity. Yishayahu just got finished saying, how can I see such a thing? I am of impure lips, and I have a nation of impure. Listen, let me teach you something about prophecy 101. The prophet's job is to place God's case before the people, and to place the people's case before God.
Not to
disparage the people this way. When you disparage, you say, I'm thinking of firing you even before I hire you. Right? Eliyahu was fired when he spoke against the people. Right? Especially if we go to the Medrash that he was a prophet for a very, very long time. What did him in under was that he said, Kano Kanesi Lashem, and he starts to complain about the people and all that they're doing. God says, you think I don't know that? I need you to tell me what they're doing. I'm pretty aware of what they're doing. I want you to beseech on their behalf. I don't need a prophet to speak against the people. I want you to place my case before the people and place their case before me, like Moshe does. Right? Eliyahu is told in the pasuk right after he speaks this way about the people, Hashem says, take Elisha ben Shaphat Nabi Tachtecha. Appoint your successor. So Yishayahu's in a similar way. Right? In fact, I can even bring another tangent. Nehemiah. You've heard of Nehemiah? Ezra Nehemiah? Nehemiah doesn't have his own book in the Bible. Open up any full Bible and it says, Ezra Nehemiah. It's one book. Ezra Nehemiah. A pasuk in Nehemiah is called in the Talmud Sefer Ezra. Right? So the Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin says, why do we take a book away from him? I mean, if he has his own book, it's 25 books of the Bible, not 24. It's one book, Ezra Nehemiah. So what did Nehemiah do wrong that took his book away? It seems to be a separate book. The courses are called Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah, not just Daniel, Ezra. Right? So what did he do? So the Gemara answers that Nehemiah keeps speaking his own praises in the book. Okay, you want to speak your own praises. That's not enough to warrant this punishment, as it were. He keeps speaking his own praises that he maintained his religious status even while serving Persian kings. He didn't eat their meat. He didn't eat their, he kept his diet kosher, even under great duress. And throughout his book, he says, "Zachor li Elokim l'tova, remember me, God, for good, because I kept." And then, but while doing so, he derides other Jews who didn't maintain their kosher diet and they stayed away from wine or other things like that while serving the Persian kings. Why? He doesn't name names. But why do you say that? Esther, it says, Vayishanez Vesmanuseha, Esther maintained her kosher diet. It says that Daniel refused to eat the king's meat. Right? So why are you so quick to speak against the others who serve in the Persian courts? Right? You want to praise yourself, fine, but don't do it at the expense of others. This is the reason the Gemara gives for Nehemiah not having his own book. So it's not a good thing for to put on a prophet's resume that you disparage the people or anyone amongst them. Okay, so Yishayahu speaks in his very opening statement, "Uvetocham tmeis v'saimen ochi yoshev," and really they should have gotten him fired. But Hashem said, "Listen, this is his first early mistake. Let me correct it. I'm going to touch his mouth with a coal. Right? Let him see. It's in his dream, so he probably woke up with a start as soon as it hit his mouth. If someone in your dream takes a coal and takes it to your face, the minute in your dream it touches your face, you're going to be startled. To the point that some psychologists even claim that you can possibly get a blister from the reaction you take when you bite yourself or something, and you can actually feel it. Right? Like Yaakov, who according to the Rambam dreamt that he was fighting with an angel and woke up with a pulled hamstring. Can dream something, and the mind is so powerful that it puts it into the body. Right? So Yishayahu has this kapara, as it were. Yirmiyahu, who in his opening prophecy did not disparage the people, didn't deserve to have that said. Okay, that's a specific difference between Yishayahu and Yirmiyahu. general difference is, it has nothing to do with what Yeshayahu had just said. Yeshayahu innocently just said, it's probably correct. The people didn't deserve it at the time either, not just Yeshayahu. Right? The problem is that Yeshayahu is older, more mature, and it probably has some, it's not Yom Kippur today, so I need to come kapara. If you're going to be a prophet, it's an important message here. If you're going to be a prophet, you have to be beyond reproach. And I'm going looking through all your emails and looking through all your past and looking through all your everything you've done. Okay, you're clean. Right. Yirmiyahu, who was such a youth at this time, didn't have any sin to atone. Right. Yirmiyahu was probably younger than 20 at this time. Yeshayahu, a grown man, probably, you know, he has children. We'll find out shortly. He has a Shayashu. He has all these children that already born to him. So he has some atonement to do. So that's what the explanation of the coal touching his mouth with the rescinding of sin. Everyone see the difference? Okay. It's very important because I think we might have just touched upon this last week, is that a prophet cannot give prophecy if he's not a perfect specimen of morality. Did I give the example that you'll go to a heart specialist even if he's 100 pounds overweight, smokes and eats pastrami sandwiches every lunch. I don't care. I just want him to cure me. I heard that he's magic with the scalpel, and he'll help me with my problems. Who cares if he follows his own advice or not? Or you'll go to a marriage therapist to help out with a problem, even though he's been married 5 times. Right? So he's magic with other people, but he doesn't know how to help himself. There are people like that, right? I don't care if he gives. I hear he gives great advice. Everyone who leaves his office solves their problems. Why he can't take his own advice, I'm not sure, but all right. But when it comes to giving mussar, we're not going to accept ethics from a person who's not ethical. The whole underpinning of your ethics. The underpinning of a good surgeon is not necessarily that he's. If his bad health makes his hand shake, then I don't want him serving me. Right? But you see, everyone agree with this point? Yeah. Right. Okay. So that is the difference. So when it comes to a prophet, you're going to tell the people to improve themselves. I used the example last time that Moshe did not rebuke the people at the end of Parshas Balak for chasing the Midianite women. Mm-hmm. Right? He did not rebuke them. Pinchas did. Why didn't Moshe rebuke them? Right, because they'll say, and Moshe, who are you married to? Never mind that there's a possible difference there.
He did it before
Matan Torah. This is after. It's quite a big of a difference. Bit of a difference here. But you have to recognize. If I come a little late to shul and I'm falling behind because the person is davening too quickly, I can't tell someone after coming late to shul that you're davening too quickly. Come exactly on time, and you'll see. I'm not catching up to you because I came late, not because you're going too fast. Come on time and complain that the person's davening too fast. But a person has to be wise when to make a statement and when to step back and not make the statement. And so, if a prophet still has a vone that needs kapara, then he's not going to be effective. Okay. All right. So now Yechezkel's initiation is going to be contrast with what I just spoke about. Yechezkel's initiation will set the stage for the type of book this is. So profoundly different than the other two I just mentioned, Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu. The nature of the prophecy is profoundly different. He is told to write down his opening prophecy on parchment with ink, and then to eat it. To eat the parchment. Now, this will set the stage for two very different opinions about what Yechezkel does with these prophecies, because there are many like this that will challenge us. I mean, they're written in the review of whether we think they actually happened or they're just a vision in his mind. Those who feel that it's just a vision insist that there's no way that God would so compromise the reputation of a prophet by having him do these things that are bizarre. I mean, a prophet is not supposed to be an object of mockery. They're mocked enough for what they say. Right? None of them are mocked for behavior. Yeah. When Hashem tells you, Yechezkel, to shave off every bit of hair on his head, including eyebrows, eyelash, everything, right, and go out and speak to the people that way, the Ibn Ezra's of the Radax and the Rambams of the world say there's no way he did that. It's supposed to represent something, either of purity or of shame or something, but there's no way he actually did these things. And that doesn't even scratch the surface of the things that Hashem told Yechezkel to do that would, in reality, compromise his standing with the people if he actually did it. There are other prophets in Tanakh that have the same issue. Hoshea HaNavi, and he's told to marry a harlot in the beginning of his book. There too, Ibn Ezra says, Chalila v'chalila, that he would do such a thing. So what does it represents something. Okay, that will be our job, to see what it represents. We'll have to do that whether we hold it happened or not. Right? Whether you think Hoshea actually married this woman, Gomer Bastiv Liam, or not, we'll have to figure, why is God telling the prophet to do this, whether in a vision or in reality? Okay, each one will have some kind of symbol or some kind of message. Okay, so Vayomer Eli, Ben Adam, Amod al Raglecha v'adeberosach. Speak in your feet and I will address you. Okay, last week we discussed why he's called Ben Adam. Vatavobi ruach kasher diber elai vatamideni al ragloi. And the Spirit came upon me. When God speaks, right, there are two levels of what happens to a person. If a person is on the level of what's called ruach hakodesh, then they may maintain faculties while God's speaking to them. They may actually hear things, right? They hear things that other people standing right next to them wouldn't hear, mm-hmm. Right? Whether what they hear in their awakened state is actually sound waves that are causing an effect on the eardrums, most commentaries say no. It's that something planted in the mind of the person. I don't know. They dreamed this up in Star Trek. Whenever you go, they go to another planet. They always speak English. How is that? They're traveling the universe. They're going 4,000 light years away, and everyone's speaking English wherever they go, right? So the answer is, then they say in one of the early episodes that there is something called the universal translator that is transposed into everyone's mind when they speak. Okay. So if they can do that in Star Trek, surely Hashem can do it. Melech Malchim Lochim can impose into anybody's mind something that's imagined. It's not real sense data, it's imagined. Right? That's called Ruach HaKodesh. The person is quite awake when he sees it. The other level is Nevuah, is real prophecy, where only one person who's ever lived could actually stand on feet while receiving such a prophecy was Moses. Moshe at the burning bush. Right? He was actually standing and looking at an actual bush. It wasn't an imagined rapid eye movement, data that's not real. So here Hashem tells him to stand on his feet, and no indication, except where it says Vatavobi Ruach, that might indicate that we can see this in both ways. It could be a nevuah in the state of the reverie, or it could be an actual he's standing in Ruach HaKodesh. Those are the two levels between Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah. The Radak actually said that Ruach HaKodesh is the state of everybody in Ksuvim, and Nevuah is the state of everybody in Nevi'im. Yeah. I think the Meiri, in his introduction to Tehillim, has a different cheshbon. He says, no, you can have Ruach HaKodesh in Nevi'im, and you can have Nevuah in Ksuvim. The difference between Nevi'im and Ksuvim is, was the prophet told to speak these words, which would put you in Nevi'im? Nevi'im, Navi means to speak, Niv is an expression, right? Or was this prophecy given to you to write down, not to speak, which would put you in Ksuvim? Right? Esther, Koheles, these things were not originally given as prophecy to speak out to the people. They were given to write. Even though it might be read publicly at some point, but the original purpose of writing, it was to be written, like all of Ksuvim, as opposed to the prophet, Yechezkel, who God gave him a message, and I want you to speak this message. Okay? So, Like a prophecy in the beginning of Yirmiyahu, Hashem tells him, I am sending you not only to my people, but also to all the peoples of the world to render a message. This great upheaval that's about to happen. Yirmiyahu's creed, Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud, this pasuk, you'll recognize it. Re'ei hifkadeticha ala goyim ala machot. The tosh, the tosh, the tosh, the tosh, the tosh, the tosh. I'm sending you we're going to give prophecy for all the nations, not just Israel. Right? And Yechezkel and Yeshayahu both do, and Yirmiyahu both do that. Yeshayahu does too, by the way. Chapter 13-23. Yechezkel, you look, you see in the middle of the book, you see I have a section there on the nations. Right? Okay. And Yirmiyahu does it at the end of his book. You see it there, at 25. והבנים כשפנים וחזקי לב אני שולח אוסך עליהם ואמרת עליהם כה אמר השם אלוקים. And I want you to go to the young ones, go to the children, go to the impressionable ones and say, you've become stiff-necked, you've become arrogant and you've become stubborn. והמה הם ישמעו ומכתלו כי בי סמרי והמה ידעו כי נביא היה בסוחם. And if they listen, if they stop their ways and they change their rebelliousness and they come to the realization that there is a prophet among them. I remember I've said, if we could get the actual Yechezkel, the person who represented Yechezkel with all his experiences, just transpose him to our day now, right? Whoever you could do such a thing, either because of time travel, or because we reincarnate him into another person who has all of his talents, everything he ever said, this person knows as if though he was the original Yechezkel, right? Every shul on planet Earth, reform, conservative, and reconstructionist, would be outbidding each other to have him as scholar residence. Don't you think?
Yes.
We had Yechezkel first. It cost us $50,000, but he has a good agent. Right? The Yechezkel we know wouldn't have charged. Right? So everybody would be clamoring. Yechezkel, the author of the Dry Bones. Oh my goodness, we had the Yechezkel as scholar in residence. Right? I think that I was just to fill in the blank. Same is true about Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu. Anybody. We had Yeshayahu, we had Amos! Amos! The great champion of the poor and downtrodden. We had him in our shul. Right? These people were mocked in their day. How do you figure? Ba'atah ben Adam, al tira mehem. Don't be afraid of them. Now, when someone tells you, don't be afraid, because you have reason to be afraid. No one tells you, listen, have one of these. Don't be afraid. You'll be okay. Have one. Right? And then you say, well, what's in there? I mean, what's the problem here? Right? Somebody says, here, have a drink. Don't be afraid. Have some. And you say, don't be afraid, because someone's afraid. Someone has reason. Yirmiyahu also, Perek Aleph. Okay, Hashem tells him, don't be afraid. And he tells him why. He said, they'll try to affect, they'll try to hurt you, they'll try to harm you, they'll try to kill you. But I'm there for you. Al tira ki saravim v'salomim osach ve'alakrabim ata yoshev midivrehem al tira mipneim al techos ki beis meri hema. Wow, this is harsher than when Hashem tells you, yeah. Okay, don't fear that they will saravim means to object. Lashon merdus. Like the sarev means to push off, to object. V'salonim, lashon kutzim. Right? They'll try to thwart you. Right? V'lakrabim ata yoshev. Akrabim are scorpions. They'll put scorpions on your seat. In other words, it just means that they'll be even mischievous. They'll put thumbtacks on you. I don't know. They'll lie in wait for you. Do not fear their words. Before them, you shall not be afraid. Right? Because they are just a rebellious people. Kipes Marie Hema. Yechezkel is almost married to this word. He uses the word Marie. I'm using a pun with the word married. He uses it all over his book. base Mary. Not to be confused with the English word, M-E-R-R-Y, but it means rebellious, like marad. It's sorer umore. Okay. And you speak my words to them, just in case they listen. Because right now they need to listen. They really need to listen. They're very rebellious. V'atah ben adam, shma is asher ani medaber elecha. Al tihi meri b'kaveis ha-meri. B'tzei picha v'echol is asher ani v'nosein elecha. Now, son of man, listen to what I say to you. Don't be merry like those merry people. I mean, I'm not kidding. He uses this word an awful lot in this book. Right? Don't be rebellious. Eat what I give you. So this is opening prophecy. And I saw a hand come out to me. And on it was parchment. And he opened the hand, opened up the parchment, and I see writing on both sides of the parchment. Usually writing is only on one side of the parchment, because parchment is rolled, and if it's writing on both sides, it's going to smudge.
It's transparent.
Panim v'chor, yes. Both sides. I'm even going to try to tell you what those two words mean. Kinim v'hege v'hi. What is this? So Kinim, Rashi says, is puranutam shel tzadikim ba'olam hazeh. Kinim. Lashon kina. Usually we'd say keynote, but I tell you, I caution you now. Yecheskel has, like Yirmiyahu, but Yecheskel even more. He has grammatical forms that are Yecheskelisms. He has six syllable words that just, we saw some already, remember? Can we look at some in Perek Aleph? Right? You know, Yecheskel just has a field day with the Hebrew language. Right? It's called poetic license. Whatever you want to call it, you know, right? But right, so the kinim are dirges, right? For hege. Hege means something that happens quickly. He says, matan scharon. Vahi. Vahi is like nehi. That Mio uses that word quite often. Vahi means oive. Vahi. Okay, kinim, dirges. Hege, something that just whisks away quickly. Vahi. So lahagot b'imrei shefer like hege hem nehege yomam b'leil. So this is an interesting thing. There's a whole chapter in Naftali Weider's book is called Karaism and the Judean Scrolls. He writes a lot about the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls makes reference a few hundred times in all that we've found to a book called Sefer Hege. Hey Gimel Hey Sefer Hege. And Weider, in great, great Bekius or collection, he gives 25 different scholarly opinions that have been written in the last, how long is the Dead Sea Scrolls known to us? The last 60 years or so, of what Sefer Hege might be. Amazing array of, it's a very honorable book in the eyes of the Dead Sea Scrolls people, but they never identify it without more than just calling it Sefer Hege, right? I'm convinced that Sefer Hege is no great chiddush about coming out of my mouth right now. No, it's enough. The Bible. Right? It's called Sefer Hege, the book that we read, the book that we Hege means to constantly be involved in. So what would you call the Tanakh? They didn't have a tripartite canon. They didn't have a Torah in the Vayim Ksuvim. What do you call the Bible in Hebrew? The word Bible didn't exist at the time. The Bible comes from the city Byblos, where they used to make paper. Right? So what can you call the Tanakh? If you don't have a Sefer Hege, the book that we read. The book that you're always involved with. Uvahem Nehege Yomam Havayla, right? So this is an amazing explanation of a Gemara in Brachas. Gemara says that in Rabbi Eliezer's deathbed, his students came in for advice. And he said, Min'u b'nechem min ha-higayon. Do not let your children study higayon too much. Now, higayon is a modern Hebrew word. What does it mean? Logic. If he was warning, don't let your students and your children study too much higayon, it's very clear what he was telling you. And it even fits other statements made by Rabbi Eliezer. Don't let the boys take too many philosophy courses. There will be too much the logic, the sophistry, the Zeno's paradoxes, they should be steeped in some ethics. The Gemara talk, the Midrashim talk about reading Homer and reading some of the ethics of the ancients. Fine, but not al tirbu b'higayon. Doesn't mean none at all. Al tirbu b'higayon is one lashon minu b'nechem in higayon. B'nechem, the young ones, they'll study logic when they get older. Right? But that's not what Rashi says. Amazing Rashi. Remember, this is Rashi who revolutionized the study of Bible. He says, what is higayon? Tanakh. Al targilum b'mikro yoser midai mishum demashcha. And they blame it on other things, like Ben Tam and others like that. But he says, do not let them study too much Tanakh because it'll draw them away from more important studies. This is Rashi who wrote the first commentary to them. Before Rashi, you know what a Bible looked like? I have copies. A Bible looked like text, Targum. Text, Targum. Text, Targum. Targum is written right after the text. I think last year I showed you, when we did Yirmiyahu, I showed you a page of Sefer Yirmiyahu from such a Tanakh. There's no commentary. The Midrashim were on the Torah, not on the Nevi'im. So Rashi revolutionized the study of Nevi'im and Ksuvim by writing commentaries, and he explains Higayon as the Bible. Don't let them do Higayon. So if Rashi was aware that in the ancient times the Bible was called Sefer Hege, so Minu B'necha Mina Higayon is just that. Okay? So it says, God opened up this Megillah before me, and written inside was Kinim V'Hege V'Hi. So, unless we can come up with some brilliant explanation of what Kinim and He is, but the Hege can mean something that the people should concentrate on.
Well, maybe what Rashi meant, don't study them out too much, is don't philosophize about it too much.
Well, yeah, you said Mishmo Mashcha means that it's, you know, you read Shmuel Beis, I can't get out. Oh, my goodness, now this is more. Shmuel Beis is much more exciting than Mesechus Arachin. Yeah, it's very exciting stuff. The Gemara says at the end in Mesechus Yuma that the Kohen Gadol had to stay up all night on Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, couldn't sleep. So they said, how do you make sure he stays up? So he said, we read him Tanakh. We read him stories in Tanakh. Right? So one guy says, I had to read Sefer Daniel over and over to him. So some of the Mefarshim say, what was so special about Daniel? Because Daniel was in Aramaic. The Kohen Gadol was such Amoratzil, they didn't know Hebrew. They had to read in Aramaic. Okay, Perkimel. Vayomer Eli, Ben Adam. Es Hashem Timtzo Echol. Echol Asa Megillah Azos Velechta Be'al Beis Yisrael. Eat it. Eat this and speak to the people. So what does this indicate? The eating of the Megillah indicates an internalization of the Nevuah. You will live your Nevuah, Yechezkel. I want you to live it. I want them to see you living what you're saying. An example is chapter 24, where Yechezkel tells them, like Yirmiyahu before him. Of course, they're going to be similar. They're speaking around the same time. Yechezkel is in Bavel, Yirmiyahu is in Israel 20, 30 years before, but they're saying they're predicting the same event, the destruction of the temple. So Yechezkel, when telling the people that times will get so bad they won't be able to mourn for lost loved ones. Why wouldn't you be able to even mourn for a loved lost one? Why not?
Because they'll be pursued.
They'll be pursued themselves. The one who killed your loved one is now pursuing you. They're not going to give you a chance to sit down and an experience, I'm sure, that people, if not people here had, then people we know had. Right? Okay. So Yechezkel actually lives out the vision that when his wife dies, he doesn't mourn, he doesn't sit shiva for her. He wears his tefillin on the first day, he makes his own food, he greets people, all the trappings of Avelis, he does the opposite. And when people would say, Yechezkel, what are you doing? wife just died. What are you doing? Why aren't you obeying the Bailus? Then he would give the message over. So he eats the Megillah as a sign of acting out the prophecies that he would one day deliver. You hear it? Unlike this is unique amongst the Nevi'im. I have quite a time learning this Sefer. So I opened up my mouth and I ate it. And fill your belly with this. Eat this Megillah. And I opened my mouth and it was sweet as honey. Dvash. Here dvash means honey, bee honey. In the Torah, dvash often means juice that flows from dates or the fruits. But here in the Torah means honey. Sforno says that honey is the only food on earth that is both good for you and tastes good. I don't know. Ebbetson often makes very good, healthy food that is so tasty.
And it doesn't spoil.
Just want to lick the pot.
So, and it doesn't spoil.
It doesn't spoil, right. They found honey from 3,000 years ago. They still have. If something gets into it, then if something falls into it, then it might spoil it. But
sweetness stays.
But the thing itself
doesn't
spoil.
Right.
Amazing?
That's interesting.
So he says that this Megillah was for me. It was good for me, and it tasted good. Right? Like the assumption is that what tastes good isn't good for you. There's lots around the table here, and what's good for you doesn't always taste so good. Memory life. Then Adam lech boil base Yisrael v'dibarti b'dvar elayhem ki lo elam im kei safa v'chivde lashon atah shelo echal base Yisrael. Go speak to them. You're not going to a stupid people. You're not going to a backward people. These people are very sophisticated. Talk to them. Lo elamim rabim im kei safa b'chivdei lashona shelo tishma divrehem im lo elayhem shlachticha hema yishmo elecha. Right? You know, you're going to a people whose language you speak. Right? Their language is like yours. I'm not telling you to go to a place where they don't speak your language. You're going to people that Yechezkel starts off in Israel, and he's going to the people in Bavel already. Now, they may have started speaking the vernacular of Bavel. They quickly assimilated. Couldn't learn. Right? Go speak to them. Right? I'm sending you to a people that you can relate to. Uveis Yisrael Pasuk Zayin, lo yovu lishmo elecha. I'm telling you now, what you might know is that they're not going to be so thrilled to listen to you. Ki namo vim lishmo elai. They're not ovim, means to want to. They don't want to listen to me. Ki kol beis Yisrael chizki meitzach ukshelev him. They're stubborn people. Stiff forehead. And a hardened heart. Okay? Hinei nasati es panecha chazakim lumas b'nehem. I've made your head harder than theirs. Es mitzchacha chazak lumas mitzcham. I made your chutzpah is going to be stronger than theirs. You'll be able to stand up to them. They're bullies. When someone stands up to a bully, the bully shirks away. Kishamir chazak mitzor nasati mitzchecha lo siro samalotechas mipneim kibes meri hema. Your forehead will be stronger than a diamond. Right? The diamonds of Lebanon. Okay.
Mitzor.
Flint, okay, yeah. Shamir is the mother.
Is that like a diamond?
Well, Rashi says min tolas. You know, it's a type of worm that has a very sharp edge to it. But Rashi says also it breaks stone. Something that can break stone. Break your head against it, it'll break stone. Memory lie. So God sent me Ben Adam. It's called for Hashem the very lecha kach v'lochav as nachashma. Right? I think we're going to stop with this. Take this word to the diaspora. Okay. Continue with the mitzvah Hashem with pasuk Yud Aleph from Perek Gimel next time.